Hello and welcome to Talking Finance. I'm Alan Kohler. Well, it's all happening on markets. The UK pound has collapsed and the stock market, the Australian stock market, looks to be ready to test, if not breach, the June lows. So it's just about close to just about there, in fact. So a couple of things to talk about. We've got the Reserve Bank meeting next week. The question is, what are they going to do? Is it going to be 25 basis points or 50? And today's retail sales will have an impact on that. To investigate the impact of the retail sales data on the rate decision, we've got Gareth Aird, Head of Australian Economics at Commonwealth Bank. On the markets, James Gerrish, Portfolio Manager at Shaw and Partners and author of the newsletter Market Matters. Well, he's buying the dip. So everyone's bearish at the moment, but not James, which is a very interesting perspective. And of course, there's a tremendous amount of activity in foreign exchange markets, with not only the UK pound collapsing, but the Australian dollar at a two-year low. The US dollar in particular is soaring. So to give us the rundown on currencies, we've got Christina Clifton, who is the currency strategist at Commonwealth Bank and a senior economist there. Politics is taking a bit of a backseat at the moment, but there's plenty going on, of course, plenty going on. And among those things, the lead up to the budget next month. So to give us a steer on politics, we've got David Spears, host of Insiders on ABC TV.
And now here's Gareth Aird, Head of Australian Economics for the Commonwealth Bank. Well, Gareth, does the retail sales this morning mean that it's more likely to be 0.5% increase in rates next week?
Well, I think at the margin it feeds into it. I think what will be important is the monthly CPI, which comes out tomorrow. We'll get a gauge of how inflation was travelling in June and August. I think in thinking about what the Reserve Bank does next week, it's worth keeping in mind that they've recently been talking about the lags between a change in the cash rate and when that impacts home borrowers. And these retail trade figures were for August. So in a lot of ways, the retail trade numbers are predating the hikes. But I think given the global backdrop at the moment, where a number of central banks are raising rates aggressively, it probably puts the RBA in an uncomfortable position to slow the pace of tightening right now, even though I think behind closed doors, that's what they'd like to be doing.
I suppose the fall in the Australian dollar also feeds into that.
At the margin, but it's worth keeping in mind that the Australian dollar against all the other crosses has been holding up, and it's actually been appreciating against a number of them. And if you look at the Australian dollar on a trade-weighted index basis, it hasn't actually fallen. It's very much a story of US dollar strength at the moment that's pushing currencies down across the board against the US dollar. But then when you look at the Aussie dollar against the other crosses, it's been holding up pretty well.
Yeah, so where do you think the economy now sits? Do you think we are heading for a recession?
No, I think in Australia a recession can be avoided, but it'll ultimately come down to how high the RBA takes the cash rate. I think the more they increase the cash rate, the greater the risk that we have a recession. And I think because of the impact of the lags, there's a risk that they take the cash rate too high, don't actually see the data that suggests that things are going to slow quickly, and then all of a sudden they start to slow as the lagged impact of the rate hikes kick in. I still think in Australia we can avoid a hard landing or a recession, but it will require the Reserve Bank not delivering anything like what's currently priced into financial markets. We've still got the base case of Commonwealth Bank that they'll pause at around 2.85%. And I think provided they do that and you see the data slowing, it'll mean that they don't need to keep taking rates higher and therefore we can avoid a hard landing.
Yeah, well, the market's pricing in 4.35% next year. What do you think of that?
Well, I think if the market pricing was to be realised, we would definitely have a recession and then we'd be talking about rate cuts anyway. I think the market has been heavily influenced by what's going on offshore. And you know, for us to have a cash rate of those sort of levels would result in a mortgage rate that's more than double where a lot of people borrowed over the last few years. And that means you get an incredible step change in interest payments. And for many, many households, that would result in significantly less spending. And then if you've got too many households spending less, unemployment goes up, and that's when you're talking about a recession.
And what do you think is going to happen to house prices?
Well, again, this is the circularity. It'll come down to how high the RBA takes the cash rate. On our profile for them to take the cash rate up another 50 basis points to kind of pause at that 2.85% mark. I think that's consistent with a fall in national home prices, peak to trough of around 15%. But again, if they were to deliver anything like what's priced into the markets, you'd be looking at a much bigger fall in home prices. And of course, that has a negative flow-on effect to the economy via the wealth effect. And then also lower turnover in the housing market means you get less spending. And I think, you know, we'd have some big problems here in Australia if home prices were to fall by more than 20%.
Yes. What do you think of what's going on in the UK?
Oh, look, it's a crazy situation at the moment. And the move in sterling obviously caught everyone off guard. What's happening in the UK is you've effectively got fiscal and monetary policy working in the opposite direction. So the government in the UK has announced a stimulatory package at a time when inflation's high and the Bank of England's raising rates. So I think there's a bit of a blueprint there for what not to do in Australia, which is basically run stimulatory monetary policy, stimulatory fiscal policy at a time when rates are rising. And I think the government here is actually making noises that means they're not going to go down that path. The Treasurer seems pretty committed to not splashing cash at the October budget, which means rates won't be rising as high as otherwise, simply because fiscal and monetary policy will be working in tandem.
In fact, they're putting up taxes, really, with the increase in the petrol excise, which is kind of equivalent to a rate hike, isn't it?
Well, that's right, and it actually adds to the rate of inflation. I mean, they would sort of argue that we're just taking settings back to where they were previously, but for a household, particularly those households at the lower end, income end of the spectrum, you know, that increase in the petrol excise acts as a tax and basically reduces the amount of money you can spend on other things.
Thanks, Gareth. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Alan.
And there he's James Gerrish, Portfolio Manager at Shoreham Partners and author of Market Matters. Well, James, it's all happening. The ASX 200 looks like it's getting ready to retest the June lows. Are you ready for that? Is that what you think is going to happen?
Yeah, it's pretty close, Alan. We're only about 1% away. So, and you think about the backdrop in equities, Aussie equities are down about 12% this year. US equities are down about 17%. So it's been a pretty torrid time. But I guess I'd caution investors out there about getting too negative after the market has moved such a significant way.
But do you think the market has priced in the prospect of what's going to happen? I mean, I suppose we don't know what's going to happen, but a lot of people thinking there's going to be a recession, global recession. So do you think that's in the price yet?
Yeah, it depends the depth of the recession. So, we can have a recession that's a lighter one, and that's probably priced in. I don't think probably a protracted and deep recession is priced into market. So I think probably in the short term, we've had a massive change in interest rates. So global bond yields have ripped higher, probably more aggressively than anyone thought they would. In the last week or so, that's been fueled by what's played out in the UK. So I think that, you know, in the short term, I think bond yields are probably looking for a high, and I think equities are probably looking for a low. Everyone's bearish out there. You know, everything I read across my Bloomberg terminal is bearish. Every investment bank has turned bearish in terms of equity allocations. So to me, that's probably a contrarian sign that the market is near a low, going out in the limb, Alan.
No, it's usually a decent sign if everyone's bearish that it's time to buy.
Yeah, I just think there's, you know, you look at the Bank of America investor survey, it's, you know, investors have got their lowest allocation to equities in years. You look at what investment banks and large institutions are advising around equity allocations, it's very low. We all know that there's some huge headwinds from an economic standpoint. We've got, you know, slowing growth at a time when interest rates are going higher. But I think, you know, to a large degree, you look at the tech sector in Australia, it's down 40% in the past 12 months. There's a lot of this already priced in, would be my view.
And what about currencies? Are you watching those? And to what extent do they influence what you do?
Yeah, so we invest overseas. So obviously, if I look at if I look at the S&P 500 down 17% over the past 12 months, the Aussie dollar is down nearly 10%. That offsets a lot of the pain that we've experienced in, you know, overseas markets. So I look at them as a stabilizing mechanism in portfolios. I'm not sure what to make of what's playing out in the UK. Obviously, the pound is down, you know, sort of 25%. It was trading at 135. It's now trading at 107. That's the huge moves. The Aussie dollar, trading around 64 cents. That's implying that there's some, it's implying concern around growth, concern around commodities, and the like. So, it's understandable, but it's probably nearer a low, equity markets are nearer a low in my view.
But these are uncertain and volatile times, aren't they, James?
Yeah, they're often uncertain and volatile times in markets, Alan. I think, we can't. You've just got to, I guess, look at what's in front of you and see where, the majority are positioned. I think that, positioning is really important. So, when everyone's bullish, I'm getting, a little bit more concerned about things. When the majority are bearish, I'm getting a little bit more optimistic about things. I'm not saying that that's, you get it right every time and you should be buying when everyone else is selling and vice versa. But over time, that generally works better than following the crowd. And right now, the crowd is universally bearish. I know we've got some, there's a lot of challenges out there. There's no doubt about that. But I think markets, you look where markets have moved, the Aussie three-year yield in the past 12 months has gone from like 30 basis points up to 3.7%. They're big moves. So I guess what I'm saying is that the quantum of change, I doubt, will be as big in the next 12 months that it has been in the last 12 months.
So bottom line, James, are you buying this dip?
Yeah, so absolutely. We've had, this is a cliche and everyone probably says this, but carrying reasonably high cash levels going into this, but we're buying technology stocks. We bought a couple yesterday into weakness. I think in the very short term, you're going to see, my view is bond yields have peaked. The UK move has created a blow off top in bond yields, at least in the short term. That plays through into more positivity towards high growth stocks like technology. I think the NASDAQ over in the US has put in a low. We've seen outperformance in the last couple of sessions, even when bond yields were moving higher. So that divergent performance is a sign that we're near a low. So yeah, we've bought SEEK, we've bought REA Group, we even bought Megaport yesterday, which is a stock we haven't owned in a long time, Alan.
Well, there you go. So good luck with that. Thanks very much, James.
It's all you need a bit of luck in this type of environment, Alan. Yeah. But I just stress around, not following what everyone else is doing. Sort of thinking independently is the key, as you no doubt know.
Yes, indeed. Thanks very much, James.
Thanks, Alan.
Now, here's Christina Clifton, who is Senior Currency Strategist and Economist at the Commonwealth Bank. Well, Christina, a lot of the action on financial markets is in the foreign exchange realm, in particular with the US dollar rising. What's going on?
Yeah, it has been a pretty exciting times for currency watchers. So, the US dollar has been appreciating quite strongly this year, and it's stepped up quite sharply just in the last week or two. So there's quite a number of things going on around the globe that are pushing that US dollar higher. Just thinking in terms of the factors, the US factors, what we've got is the US Federal Reserve raising interest rates very aggressively to bring down very high inflation in the US. And that is raising fears that we are going to see a sharp slowdown in the US economy or perhaps even a recession. And when we see a slowdown in the US economy, we tend to see the US dollar move higher. So that's a little bit counterintuitive. But the US dollar is tend to be seen as a safe haven currency. So a weaker US economy and a weaker global economy will push the US dollar higher. So that's one of the factors at play at the moment. And there's also some other factors that are specific to other countries that are pushing down their currencies and pushing up the US dollar. So we've
in particular the pound, which has crashed.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. So the pound has fallen very sharply over the past couple of days. And that's because we've seen the new government in the UK come out with their mini budget. So they're planning to cut taxes for both households and businesses quite aggressively. And they've also got a whole lot of other spending measures as well, including lowering energy costs for households and businesses. But that's a lot of spending that's going to be coming into the UK economy at a time when their economy is facing capacity constraints and inflation is very high. And the Bank of England is currently working on lifting interest rates to bring down inflation. So we're going to be having a lot of government spending at a time when inflation is already high and interest rates are moving higher to stop that. And I think that's prompted a bit of a crisis of confidence in the UK. So, you know, people
it's interesting that because markets usually like tax cuts and that sort of thing, you know, the sort of policies that that the new UK government is introducing. But in fact, in this time, they don't like it.
No, they don't like it. And I think, there's a realisation that it's perhaps coming at the wrong time. So it's coming at a time when inflation is high and demand is strong in the UK economy, too strong, in fact, and we've got lots of issues with labour shortages and very strong wages growth. So I think people are concerned that it's going to push inflation up even higher. And that the Bank of England will need to respond by raising interest rates even more aggressively than they already are. And we had some comments from the Bank of England's chief economist last night, and he did say that, you know, these new spending measures are going to lift demand and add to inflation, and the Bank of England is going to need to respond quite aggressively to that. So financial markets are now looking for the bank rate to peak at around 6%, whereas prior to this mini budget, the peak was expected to be around 4%. So people are feeling that we're going to need extra interest rate rises and extra high interest rates to counter this extra spending by the government.
Meanwhile, the Australian dollar is below 65 US cents and 2-year low. What do you think the outlook is for the Aussie?
Yeah, so we are forecasting the Aussie dollar to move even lower. And in large part, that is because of what's happening on the US dollar side of the equation. So we're expecting a stronger US dollar, and then that will push down the Australian dollar. There's also some issues in China. The Chinese economy has really slowed because of the COVID zero policy and all the lockdowns and restrictions going on there. Also some difficulties in the property sector. And because China is our biggest trading partner, when we tend to see issues in China, that tends to push down the Australian dollar. So that's one factor that's weighing on our currency as well.
The dollar, the Australian dollar, could, if it keeps going down, what does that imply for the Reserve Bank, do you think?
So they do take into account the level of the currency and the way the currency has moved when they set interest rates. They largely sort of view currency movements and think about them as how they might be impacting on the inflation outlook. A lower Australian dollar does make our imports more expensive in Australian dollar terms. So that can add to the inflationary pressures. I don't think we're going to see a really sharp drop in the Australian dollar from here. We're forecasting it to get to 62 cents, so only a little bit lower than we are already. So I don't think moves of that order aren't going to really probably weigh into the RBA's decision. But certainly if we start to see a lot of volatility in the Australian dollar, really sharp moves like we've seen in the pound, that could certainly raise the attention of the RBA. But if things kind of pan out as we expect, we don't think it'll shift the dial on their decision making.
Great. Thanks very much, Christina.
Thanks, Alan.
And now on politics, here's David Spears, presenter of Insiders on the ABC. David, what's the main thing in politics this week?
Well, it's the Anti-Corruption Commission, the National Anti-Corruption Commission. It'll be known as the NAC. Get used to that acronym. Look, we've waited a long time to see the detail of this, and Mark Dreyfus, the Attorney General, has just introduced the draft legislation, now the legislation this morning. This was a key promise, as people would know from Labor. It was a big deal for all those independents that won seats as well. There have been a lot of consultations since the election about the detail, and now we're finally seeing it. It will all go to a committee for probably the next 6 weeks or so, to have a good look at all of this detail. And the government's hopeful of a vote by the end of the year. It's all lining up pretty well for the government, I think, to get this through. But there is some contention now that we've seen the detail about one aspect in particular, and that's public hearings. And this was always going to be one of the most interesting elements of this. People would know the criticism from Scott Morrison and other Liberals over the years has been of these ICACs, that they can be a bit of a kangaroo court, this show trial element they wanted. And under their previous proposal, the Morrison government proposal, to have all the hearings held privately. Advocates of an integrity body have said it has to be public so that people can see there's some transparency around this, see the commission at work. Where the government's landed, the Albanese government, is they've said it'll be up to the commission, but it has to be an exceptional circumstance for a public hearing, and it must be in the public interest. Now, some of the independents say that's a bit of a high bar. They would rather public hearings be the default. So we'll see where this one lands. It seems Labor might be steering this towards an agreement with the coalition rather than the independents. But look, we'll see. There might be still some movement on this over the course of the next 6 weeks or so.
Where do you think the positioning for the budget is now settled? Any kind of real clue as to what the budget's going to look like in a month's time? Well, no, it's not actually less than a month, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about a month away at the end of October. Yeah, we know that this will largely involve delivering on Labor's promises and not much more. So the childcare package, cheaper medicines, fee-free TAFE places. But beyond that, Jim Chalmers is holding the line pretty hard against further cost of living relief. And that's for a couple of reasons. One, the budget is a bit of a mess, that structural deficit and the huge debt that he's inherited doesn't want to add to that. But secondly, tipping out more relief into people's pockets right now is only going to make the inflation problem worse. So politically, that's not an easy line to hold when, inflation is still rising. That petrol excise coming off this week as well. Politically, this will be a tough line for the Treasurer, but it's the responsible line, and I can't really see him bending too much beyond that. It'll be in the future budgets, next year, the year after, that we'll start to see the structural changes tackled by the government, at least hopefully, because we do need some structural changes to deal with that structural deficit that that remains.
Hey, David, what did you think of the interview with Jane Hume on the weekend?
Look, I thought Jane Hume, a little sympathy for her in that she had to hold a pretty confused coalition line that's not hers to really decide on the fuel excise in particular. Now, obviously, I was asking, what's their view? Should this fuel excise come
in? Yeah, I know, but why can't she answer that?
Well,
did they just come up with a line that she has to hold or something?
I think that's basically how it works. She doesn't want to get out ahead of Peter Dutton, the shadow treasurer as well, who haven't made a call on this. They simply do seem to want it both ways. That is to argue on the one hand for budget responsibility, but on the other, not upset motorists by backing in an end to this fuel excise cut. Now, the coalition, I mean, don't forget Josh Frydenberg as treasurer made it very clear when he announced this. It was only 6 months, then it would come to an end. But since then, they've softened that position. Now, for Jane Hume, that left her in a pretty awkward position, yes. I think a clearer answer would have been far more preferable. She's, in a sense, what I'm saying, lumped with towing the party line, which is a rather confused line at the moment on that.
And Sam Maiden called your interview brutal. I didn't think it was brutal.
I think you've got to understand Sam Maiden's humour that comment.
And then Monday night there was the full four corners on Peter Dutton, which was amazing. How did you think he came out of that?
I think okay. You know, it did go back over as a strong profile piece back over. Some of the contentious elements of Peter Dutton's history in Parliament, in those ministerial roles in particular. And that's baggage that he's really carried into the leadership. The challenge for him now is to, as he's acknowledged, let people see more of him. But it really is that political record that he, has to own. Can't walk away from that. And that, I think, is the main task for him now as Liberal leader.
Do you think he will become one of a long line of opposition leaders who never becomes Prime Minister?
Well, that's what history would suggest. No opposition leader after a party has lost government, the first leader doesn't go on to win the next election or become Prime Minister.
Has the first leader ever gone on to become Prime
Minister? Not as far as I'm aware. So, you can go back over certainly my lifetime and you won't find one who's become leader after losing government and gone on to win an election. So, that's the historical legacy that Peter Dutton faces. So who knows? I would note one caveat, though. Political norms are often broken these days. It's a pretty unpredictable game. So, anything could happen. But right now, it's a big ask.
What would you, we haven't got long, but if you were writing the review that Brian Loughnane and Jane Hume are doing of the election result for the Liberal Party, what would you write?
Well, clearly on the policy front, they had problems and we know them. Climate change was a big one. The anti-corruption body was another. And I think, some of the positions and attitudes and lack of representation of women was another. We know that cost them. What do they need to do from here? Well, they need to get a better sense of where they stand on those things. But they are fundamentally still torn between conservatives and the moderates who've lost all those teal seats on issues like climate change in particular. And I suspect on the voice to parliament might be another one as well. So until they can find a way of resolving those differences, it's going to be, there's only so much that a presentation can do. It's really those core policy differences that I think still remain the biggest difficulties.
Great to talk to you, David. Thanks.
Thanks, Alan.
And I don't know if you watched the grand final on Saturday, but I thought one of the highlights, in fact, the only highlight probably, was Robbie Williams doing a fantastic show before the game. And one of the best things about it was doing a tribute to John Farnham and with The Voice. So here's a bit of that performance of Robbie Williams at the grand final doing You're the Voice.
We have the chance to turn the pages over. We can write what we want to write. We gotta make ends meet before we get much older.
Gotta love the crowd singing along with all of that. Well, that's all from me. Have a great week.